I'd like to call the Finance Committee meeting to order. We do have a quorum present, and we have the minutes from the February 26th meeting. If anyone's had a chance to take a look at those, Representative Huntley, would you like to move the minutes as you're walking forward? You're also the first bill up. Representative Huntley moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We have five bills up on the agenda this morning, and then if we do have time, we would like to have the fiscal analyst and division overviews for the housing and public housing policy and finance and the public health finance division, as well as health and human services divisions. Representative Huntley, we have your bill before us dealing with, let's see, what is the number there, 163. And Representative Kahn, would you care to move the division report?
I move adoption of the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 163.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. And Representative Huntley, would you care to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 163 be sent to the floor.
Okay, be placed on the general register then.
Right.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Huntley, if you'd care to go over the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill does two things, both for the City of Duluth. It allows the City of Duluth to set up what's called an irrevocable trust fund, which would be managed by the State Board of Investment and have oversight of the public employees' retirement, whatever para is. And the reason for this particular one is the City of Duluth has a horrendous problem in that they promised free health care to all the retirees for the past 25 years. And during that time, they never put any money aside to pay for it. So they have this, and it's a $300 million unfunded liability potentially out there. And to put it in perspective, the annual budget of the city is $78 million a year, so this is many years' worth of the city's budget. Currently, under state law, the cities are very restricted in how they can invest their money. This simply allows them to invest it in a place where they can get a higher rate of return than they currently can, and this will cut their liability from about $300 million down to about $150 million. So it reduces that liability in half. And I will say they have, I think it's about $12 million they're willing to invest in this right now from another fund, and the interest spread over the next 30 years comes to about $35,000 a day that we're wasting. They could. So the faster we can get this done, the better off it is for the City of Duluth. It's supported by all the unions have agreed except AFSCME currently in the City of Duluth. They've changed their, the other three unions have changed their retirement benefits for their retirees so that no future employees will get this benefit. They will get a lump sum payment, but it will be a defined contribution. The second thing this does is for another matter, allow the city to also invest with the State Board of Investment for another fund the city has, and hopefully that would also get them a higher rate of interest. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. We have people here from the city to testify if there are any questions, but it's been through local government, it's been through state government and state government finance, so this is it's been already through three committees.
Okay, is there any discussion, any questions on the Huntley bill? Representative Clark.
Just one question. So are the benefits going then from defined benefits to defined
defined contribution? Is that what's happening?
No, the what this will do, I mean, if they can get this higher rate of interest through State Board of Investment, that money will go to pay the retirees' health care, either current retirees or future retirees, other than the ones that we hire from this point on.
Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hundley, we tried doing this in the state government bill last year, which ended up not getting through, and it's something I believe strongly we should do because of the fact that things are getting worse by the day. I'm wondering, when we go to page 3 of your bill, why the effective date is June 30th, if we could pass it quickly and have a day after effective date if the SBI... I don't know if Mr. Bicker is here or not, but if SBI could start the investments earlier, if that would help move this policy forward in a quicker manner to help stave off the decline in value that we've been seeing almost basically on a monthly basis, that if we did move the effective to a day after enactment, if that would help out and give you more flexibility to have the SBI do that. And I don't know if state government, if Representative Kahn remembers, if they talked about that or not, but you know, we talked about this when I chaired the committee last year, about trying to do something quickly because of the fact that it gets worse almost on a daily or monthly basis, and we've got to do something because it's just becoming a sinkhole on the city and ultimately on someone else if we don't do something.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, that's just the effective date for the new Howard Bicker annual report that we're going to get on the investment, on how the investments are working. So I think the effective date is as soon as the local approval comes from Duluth.
That's what I've just been informed, but that effective date is, Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert, is just for that section, and that the rest of the bill takes place, goes into effect when we sign it.
Day after final enactment or as soon as the city of Duluth agrees to it or passes a resolution or something?
Yep.
Okay,
2 months. Mr. Chair, that's 3.6 and 7. This section is effective the day following the day. And so forth. So it's just the SBI report that's June 30th, 07.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both Representative Huntley and Kahn say yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Luchesky.
Can't see you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
I do know that Representative Mary Murphy would like to say something about this bill and has dashed off to her office, so I don't know if we could come back to it. She asked us to make sure she got a word in on the bill. But she is not. She had to get something.
I think she's just coming into the room.
There we
so
go.
You were very, you were very helpful and
stalling.
if it's appropriate, Representative Murphy, they indicated you had a comment.
Mr. Chair, I do, and I had it. Representative Huntley, in the paper this weekend, it said that for this bill, we were going to be asking for a state appropriation. Do you want to comment on that?
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, there's no cost to the state with this bill. We are not asking for a state contribution to this fund, and in fact, the State Board of Investment will charge us a fee for whatever it costs them to manage these investments. So there's no state impact with this bill.
And Mr. Chair, Representative,
under
that. But it was just a little tiny article, and I clipped it out because I was going to show it to Kevin Wally first thing this morning and say, how did this happen? And so we needed that clarification on the record. There is no intent to ask the state for any money for this bill.
That would be correct, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy.
That's all, Mr. Chair.
And
thank you.
You're very welcome. And by the way, there is a fiscal note in the packet as well that shows, at least with this bill, there's no fiscal impact. So, Representative Yarrows, another gentleman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just hope, since a lot of city employees live in Hermantown, Crockford, and most of her district, that they would be generous neighbors and help us out voluntarily.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Murphy.
They've already got their increased water bills that show that that is happening, and they are more generous.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have a little debate here with the suburbs of Duluth and the center city, apparently? Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, it's as fun as an Iron Ranger to see the Duluth delegation in a dialogue similar to what happens when good Rangers fight, so it's interesting to look from the outside.
Any further? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if this is really a question for Representative Huntley or for staff, but I'm just curious if there are other cities throughout the state that have similar problems or mounting problems like we see in Duluth, and if that's the case, why aren't we looking to do something more on a statewide basis? I don't think I have a problem with your bill, Representative Huntley, but I'm just wondering if it makes sense to address this city by city, or if there's if we've looked into a more statewide approach.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Resident Coles, yes, there are many other cities. The legislative auditor did a report, and apparently it's about a $3 billion problem across the state with various units of government, school boards, all kinds of other groups that have made promises and not put money aside. So this is simply the first bill. There will be another bill. Representative Hillstrom has it, and Senator Betzold that will do this for the rest of the states, for rest of the state, for those local units that have very similar problems. So there will be another bill. I think this is going separately because the city of Duluth was ready. It's got money to invest, and it's costing the city, as I said, $35,000 a day. So there will be another bill.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative Kahn. Two are on the list.
I was just going to say the same.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor of the Huntley motion to place the bill on the general register, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now go to
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
You're very welcome. We'll now go to House File number 9, Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the committee report of 22107 from the Division on Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Duncan, care to move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 9, recommend it to pass and be referred to taxes.
The motion is before us, and if you'd explain the bill, then Representative Johnson.
Members, this is a bill. It's been around a number of years. We're taking another stab at it. It's a dairy investment tax credit bill. It's actually also got some other livestock in it at this point in time. What it does is allow a tax credit up to 10% of the first $500,000 for improvements in dairy facilities. That can be both real estate, pasture acquisition, building upgrade, et cetera, et cetera. It also does the same thing for other livestock, poultry, swine, sheep, beef, anything else that's not dairy. But we've done that at a smaller rate, at 10% of the first 100,000. And again, what we're looking at there is more of a trial to see what the interest is with other livestock. Members, we have a great need, obviously, to upgrade and to modernize these dairy facilities as we try to keep that industry viable and productive in the state. So for a number of reasons, this bill, we believe, is a good one. I'm appreciative that it's House File 9 so that we can make a a little statement to the state of Minnesota that agriculture is important also, and it's one of our top 10 bills in the House. And bipartisanly, Mr. Chair, this passed out of committee with no dissent, and we would hope to move on to taxes and have a good discussion over there on the merits of this project.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Okay. Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. Is there any way this could be offset against the $9 billion plus in subsidies that have been paid to the farmers over the last 10 years or whatever they said in the morning paper?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I suspect you're talking about federal farm bill, which is being debated in Washington, so we're not near that here in the state. Probably beyond the ethanol credits, there's not a lot of subsidizing that goes on in the state of Minnesota for agriculture. Very few. This is one of very few times we've asked for this.
Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, then all in favor of the motion by Representative Junkie that House File Number 9 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're very welcome. House File 158 by Representative Erdahl.
And Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the Ag, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance Division Report of 221 for House File 158.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
And Mr. Chair, I'd move approval of House File 158 and refer it to taxes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Erdahl, if you would explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members. This bill, 158, expands the sales tax exemption to include bins, tires, fences, hutches, mats, and construction materials for livestock containment and housing. You all know the importance of agriculture to Minnesota. 79,000 farms, 28 million acres, a leading economic engine for the state. What this bill does is it tries to achieve some consistency in sales tax as it relates to agriculture, to promote expansion in agriculture's value to our economy. It aids younger and starting farmers. It's a boost to struggling farmers. It helps with our competition with other states, such as Wisconsin, which does have this. It's a tax, actually. The current tax is passed on to consumers, and it would help with that. Just a brief example, my neighbor recently constructed a new barn and a parlor in it, and it would have saved him $7,000. This is not to necessarily compete with the investment tax credit that Representative Junkie just presented to you. It's another option or alternative. And I'd like to credit to Representative Abrams from before and Representative Lucheski for the idea to do this bill.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor House File 158 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I think we'll drop down to House File 539. We'll revert back in a moment to House File 446. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 539 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any...
Mr. Chair, this is
I guess I almost started to move to the vote.
We that's all right.
If you could give us an overview of the bill.
Mr. Chair, this is a turnback bill. Both of these turnbacks are brought forward and supported by the Department of Transportation. There's one for a piece of road in my district, and there's also one for Representative Gunther down in his district. In our case, Candy Lake County, City of Willmar. They've already approved this, which must be done on a local basis. I'm not sure in Fairmont, but it does say upon approval. This has to be approved by both local and state governments. There is no cost to this, to the turnback account or anything else. It's a simple matter of getting legislative approval, and we are... this is one that we need to go... Members, the reason it's here, we need to go to the floor with this. There are people waiting out in Candy Lake County for this to be done because it's a concerning expansion of the industrial park where the old airport used to sit, and there's some business deals waiting passage of this legislation.
Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Seifel.
Mr. Chairman, I know in the past a lot of the turnback legislation, if it's not controversial, we've agreed to put it on the consent calendar. If Representative Junkie would like to do that, I think the minority's fine with that. If he wants to move it to the consent calendar, I know the majority leader is on the committee. I have no problem putting it on the consent calendar. If Representative Junkie would want to expedite it.
Well, Mr. Chair, their time is of the essence here. There's a rather large company waiting to come in, but it's all contingent on this turnback being completed. There is no money cost. I don't know that there'd be any discussion on the floor to it or not. I doubt it. So that would be helpful if I could amend my motion to have 539 pass and be placed on the consent calendar.
Okay, that motion then is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And we'll go down to our fiscal presentation where we have to get some language apparently on the con bill reflecting some action from the county division. So we'll just hold on that one until later in the meeting. Ms. Adrian.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for having me back. I believe you should be getting a copy of a packet that looks like this. What I'm going to talk about is give you a brief overview of the Housing and Public Health Finance Committee and some of the accounts that are included. I think you're getting it now. I have another packet that is my tracking spreadsheet, which I believe they're making copies of now, so you should get that in a few minutes.
Okay.
If you'll look at the first page, or page 2, this is the same chart that you've seen a number of times, and it shows that 1% of the overall state budget goes towards the Housing and Public Health Committee, and this amounts to approximately $327 million. This number did not change as a result of the February forecast. It stayed actually exactly that amount. The next page is a listing of all of the accounts in the committee, and I'll just point out a few. We have all of the Housing Finance Agency. We also have two of the accounts from the Department of Human Services, other children and economic assistance grants, and refugee services grants. What's included in those for refugee services grants, this is a totally federally funded program, and what it does is provides assistance for needy refugees who don't qualify for programs like the Minnesota Family Investment Program or for medical assistance. And then other children and economic assistance grants. Some services that are included there are like supporting housing grants, transitional housing program, and food shelves and emergency services program. And that gets some federal funding along with state funding as well. We also have almost the entire health department, except for policy, quality, and compliance, which is in the Healthcare and Human Services Committee. We have Veterans Home Board and then a number of councils and boards, and you'll see a list of all of the health-related boards there as well. Now, if you'll go to the next page, this is a breakdown, the pie chart, it's a breakdown of that allocation of the $327 million that's the base level funding spending for the upcoming biennium. And the biggest chunks of this go towards the health department, which you see gets about 40% of the pie. Housing gets about 24%, and the Veterans Home Board gets about 23%. So those are kind of the big three in the committee. The next page breaks these numbers out for you. And I thought I should talk here a little bit about what the governor's budget recommends. He recommends increasing this total to about $408 million in spending, which is about an $80 million increase. Some of the biggest changes there are in housing, where he recommends an additional $35.5 million in spending, and that is on programs like preventing and ending long-term homelessness and some other housing development programs. He also recommends for the Department of Health adding an additional $20 million for pandemic influenza preparedness. In the past, for the prior state funding for that program had been just a one-time appropriation, so he's recommending adding a little bit more for that. And then also the Veterans Home Board, he recommends an additional $8 million in spending over the biennium, and this is for programs such as repairs and betterments. Now if you'll go to the next page. This pie chart shows the allocation of total fund resources for the upcoming biennium. And this is the total spending of all the accounts in the committee, which would include, in addition to state spending, federal funding, grants, and fees. You can see on there that the Department of Health still accounts for the largest portion at about 34%. And housing is still a pretty big chunk of that at 26%. But you'll notice that human services now jumps up to about 29%. And that's, again, because the Refugee Services is solely a federally funded program. And the numbers for that pie chart are broken out on the next page, once again by account. And I'd like you to notice that the total fund expenditures at the bottom are about $1.8 million for the upcoming biennium. And this, so of this number, state aid accounts for about 18% of that total. And then the only other thing I wanted you to have was my tracking sheet, which has a lot more numbers than anyone is probably interested in. But in case you're interested in more detail, it's on this sheet, which I believe you received. Oh, okay. It's in the back of the packet. Great. So with that, if I could answer any questions.
There are questions of Ms. Avery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said the increase of $8 million a year for Veterans Home Board was for repairs and betterments.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm checking on the repairs section of that. Do you know how much is for repairs? And is that one-time cash in lieu of bonding? Or usually when we do building repairs, we talk about bonding dollars or cash dollars and not putting it into a base budget. So have you differentiated the betterments from the repairs part of that governor's language and requests?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it is a state appropriation for the first 2 years for 2008 and 2009 of $4 million for each year, and then after that, for 2010 and 2011, he recommends $2 million for each year. So rather than being bonds, I think it's just a straight appropriation that I assume is ongoing. What he's looking to do is to do things like repair of interior building deficiencies that exist, to provide updates and safety compliance, life compliance, and just to fund replacement of anything that's wear-related, like floors and ceilings, and also providing for things like routine mechanical repairs. If you'd like more information than that, I can
get
it for you.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sure Representative Clark will be interested in that and looking at it in the committee, but I'm just peripherally concerned that we have a breakdown between repairs and programming so that we can understand that repairs is one-time cash, but if you're adding additional programming, certainly that needs to probably be in the base. And I assume through the committee process, hopefully that'll be separated, and we will see that in the final document, obviously, one-time monies being allocated to repairs, if that's the way we choose to do it, or it might end up in Representative Hausman's bonding committee. I mean, that's why we need to separate it so we can make those decisions.
second, and next is Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Adrians, is there healthcare access fund money in this committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I believe there is some healthcare access money, but it's a very small amount, certainly compared to your committee. I can't tell you right now the exact amount that's set aside for healthcare access fund, but I know that there is a little bit.
Mr. Chair,
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you could just inform me what that is, because you mentioned, I think, the bird flu money, and the governor's always tried to put that in the health care access fund.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did Walker was that on that point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, real briefly. Representative Huntley touched on it, but I think the exact amount, including what the dollars are going to, be quite helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Adrians. On your spreadsheet, line 16, other child and economic assistance grants, just trying to figure out, as this new committee structure, exactly what is where. Can you tell us a little bit about what is in those, and is there any TANF money that goes through this committee? Or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Flowick, for the other children and economic assistance grants, there is some TANF money that's appropriated to that. I think for the biennium, for the base funding, it was about almost $2.8 million that was appropriated. And what that includes is, as I kind of covered before, things like supportive housing grants, transitional housing programs, food shelves, emergency services programs.
Mr. Chair, what would be the, well, is there specifically child-related? I guess I'm looking at that since I have the Early Childhood Committee.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Flowick, this one is interesting because it does sound like it would be children and economic assistance grants, but for the most part, it just covers those other programs that are related to food, housing, services to low-income families. There's very little that is directly applied to children's services or child care services or anything that you find in your committee.
Thank you.
Representative Bosholder.
Mr. Chairman, on your spreadsheet, lines 30 and 31, can you give me a little bit more clarification on the governor's proposal of increase of the base? Those two together is about $20 million. Public health laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the additional rent that we need to pay for the lab that's built on the Capitol Mall?
Mr. Chair and Representative, what for the public health laboratory operations, the money that is recommended for that is, it says on the page, the money is to cover new and unanticipated costs that are associated with lease rates and the operation of the new laboratory building. So it is for the new.
And how about Mr. Chair, the line 31, the 17.5?
The Mr. Chair and Representative, the Office of Emergency Preparedness, I believe that is where the pandemic influenza,
okay,
where that additional money has been appropriated.
And Mr. Chair, just one other thing is that entire amount for the anticipated bird flu?
The Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. I believe the majority of it is for the bird flu.
Okay. Any other questions of Ms. Adrians before we ask Representative Clark to comment? Okay, thank you very much. Representative Clark, would you share with us then what you see as the main issues and goals and objectives of your division?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this committee has, as they often talk about, kind of survival needs, roofs over people's heads and food in their mouths and that sort of thing. So one of the things that we've talked about in this committee is, you know, how we sync with the governor and how we don't. We took a tour of homeless shelters, for example, and found out that although there's no money in the governor's budget for that particular issue, the state has a policy. I mean, basically our programs for homeless youth are to give them a bus ticket to ride the bus all night. So we've been talking about how we can actually fill in some of those concerns that are not addressed in his budget. We've heard from housing advocates and organizations who think we should be spending about two-thirds more just to meet some of the basic needs, not only for that, but also because there are problems like with foreclosures all over the state. There's problems with people being able to fix up their houses. There's a lot of concerns like that. And preserving actually housing that's there. So we're not, with the budget as it's been proposed by the governor, we're not back to where we were before the fiscal crisis. So the committee's been talking about that. We've also looked additionally at issues of environmental health and some of the issues that the health department has started to address, but has, I'm thinking of some of the stuff that's happening with the PFCs out in suburban eastern part of the metro area. We've been looking at some of those issues. And then maybe the last thing I'll say is we are going to have a hearing jointly with Representative Huntley's committee on the veterans issue, veterans home board issue. It's certainly come to light as a very, very serious issue that the committee needs to address.
Okay. Thank you. And if there are no further questions of Ms. Adrians or Representative Clark, we'll move to the report then by Mr. Walls.
Thank you.
Mr. Walls, thank you for welcome.
Mr. Chair, John Walls, House Fiscal Staff. I'm going to be doing a brief overview of the Health Care and Human Finances Division. I believe everyone has a packet. My apologies, some were fed into the machine and stapled kind of awkwardly. But if you want to start with the cover page where that has the date on it of March 5th. And, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I'll try to move very quickly. Mr. Chair, starting with the first page, as Ms. Adrian said, this is a chart you're all very familiar with by now, just showing the percentage of the general fund budget that healthcare and human services finance takes up. There is a few dollars included in this chart for the Department of Health that are not included in our budget. This is sort of the I believe this is laid out in the this chart is segregated into the way Health and Human Services was subdivided in the past and not up to the current distribution of funds, so it's a little bit larger than the actual portion, but roughly we're receiving about 28% of the general fund budget. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page, this is just expenditure all funds by committee for last biennium. When you include federal dollars for TANF, Medicaid, and the other dollars that the committee uses, Health and Human Services takes up about 36% of the overall spending by the state. Mr. Chair, moving on to the next page, this is a chart that shows the base level budget growth from last biennium to anticipated spending this biennium. You can see that Health and Human Services has the largest increase of about $1 billion. Some of this is caseload driven, but there are other large portions of this increase that are due to inflationary costs that are automatically added to the budget of Health and Human Services for things like hospital rebasing and adding inflationary costs to MA building or MA medical assistance billing through the federal Medicaid program. Mr. Chair, moving to the following page, this is just shows you the different portions of the human services budget and the different funds that are included there. There's about $9 billion in general fund. There's some special revenue, some health care access dollars, federal TANF, lottery money. The federal portion you see, the 8.9, is mostly Medicaid dollars, but there are some other federal dollars in that portion, miscellaneous agency, and some other funds. Mr. Chair, the $1.6 billion of miscellaneous agency funds is primarily pass-through money that are collections of child support payments that the department collects and then passes on to where that child support is intended to go. So it's mainly just a pass-through expenditure.
Mr. Walsh, that's in reference to what you've got marked as special revenue. Is that what?
That would be the. It is in the about the
what?
Area between 11 and 12 o'clock on the graph, the $1.6 billion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, moving on to the next page, one of the major areas that people think of when they think of the Health and Human Services Committee is the low-income family support programs. There are several programs for cash assistance, food assistance, and child care assistance contained within this area of the budget. $263 million a year we receive as a block grant or federal TANF money. This is for temporary assistance to needy families. It replaced the formerly AFDC money. Most of that is spent in the MFIP, or Minnesota Family Investment Plan program. That program basically supplies cash and food assistance to about 100,000 people per month. $65 million out of the $262 million total annual funding are provided by the general fund. There's also a smaller program, the Diversionary Work Program, serves about 11,000 people a month. Those are people that come to receive public assistance but have the most marketable skills, and they are more aggressively moved back into work, and that's a smaller number of people. Annual cost is $17 million, with $146,000 coming from the general fund. Mr. Chair, there's a large portion of the family support is the child care assistance. This is not funding that's provided primarily in our committee. It's primarily provided in the Early Childhood Committee. But I just mentioned it here because it's a matter of spending about $200 million a year, with $65 million coming from the general fund. Mr. Chair, moving on to the next page. There is a chart which is the federal TANF reserve balance sheet. The only thing of note, or the main thing of note, this is just sort of a balance sheet that shows the projected spending and the unexpended balances in TANF. If you look under the column labeled fiscal year 2009 and go down to the bottom figure on that column, $98 million is the projected unspent amount of TANF dollars that will be able to be spent by the legislature on TANF-related programs. Mr. Chair, again, quickly moving to the next page, we get into some of the health care programs. These are some charts that are done by the Minnesota Department of Health and available on their website. Just some general information about Minnesota Care enrollment and spending. The average monthly enrollment for Minnesota Care in 2006 was about 128,000 people in the average month. The spending on the program in 2006 was $438 million. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page is just a pie chart showing the average makeup of Minnesota Care. 31% are parents, 23% are adults without children, and about 45% of those covered are children. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page, just a quick display of the funding that is provided to fund the Minnesota Care program. 8% comes from enrollee premiums. Federal funds make up about 34%, and 57% is health care access fund dollars. Mr. Chair, moving to the chart on the following page, this is similar to the TANF fund balance. This is just a balance sheet for healthcare access fund dollars. If you look under the box containing the February 2007 forecast, and again look to the bottom of the 2009 column, there will be about $270 million of unobligated balance in the healthcare access fund that's available to the legislature to spend this year. That would be without making any changes that affect or increase revenue. Mr. Chair, moving quickly to the following page, similar page talking about the MA program. The MA program of medical assistance is the state Medicaid program, and this pays for low-income people with children to receive health care. The average enrollment per month is about 500,000 people. and there is about $5.4 billion spent annually on this health care program, about half coming from the federal government and roughly half coming from the state. And that would be general fund, Mr. Chair. Moving to the next page is just a table to show a representation of who are the recipients of this program. About 10 or 11% are elderly, 20% are disabled, and 70% are families with children. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page, it shows you where the spending goes in this program. And as I said before on the previous page, 70% of families with children, however, they encompass 23.9% of the spending. The disabled receive nearly 50% of the spending at 49.7%, and elderly, while they make up 11% of the program, receive about 26.5% of the spending. Mr. Chair, moving on to the next page, our last program, General Assistance Medical Care. This is a program that primarily services very low-income people, but it tends to be people without children. These are generally single adults that receive health care through this program. Average monthly enrollment is here below 40,000, and the spending is about $289 million a year for those folks. Mr. Chair, moving to the next page, there's one final health care program. This would be MCHA. MCHA is Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, and this is health care for high-risk people or people with pre-existing conditions. The monthly enrollment is about 33 million people, and there's about $200 million in spending each year on that program. Mr. Chair, moving on to the next page, there's some bullet points about a couple other major areas within the Department of Human Services. Continuing care grants basically are several programs that provide nursing home care, in-home community alternative care, mental health programs, and chemical dependency treatment. The continuing care grants base spending for fiscal 2008-09 biennium is $6.4 billion. About half of that, or a little over half of that, $3.3 billion comes from the general fund. Much of that, the other half, is Medicaid reimbursement. Mr. Chair, the last area in the Department of Human Services is state-operated services. They provide treatment to persons with continuing mental health problems, developmental disabilities, and chemical addiction in residency-based programs. They also house people found to be mentally ill and dangerous or sexually dangerous on state campuses and security hospitals. State-operated services is projected to spend $760 million for the upcoming biennium, and primarily the lion's share of that, $515 million, comes from the general fund. Mr. Chair, moving quickly to the last page, the portion, the Department of Health, our committee has a portion of that funding. The Department of Health is projected to spend nearly $1 billion during the next fiscal biennium. The Office of Policy, Quality and Compliance is the only area within the Department of Health that our committee has oversight, and the spending is $220 million. So it's roughly a fifth of overall health. Department of Health spending, $7.3 million comes from the general fund. Policy, Quality, and Compliance administers MRC grants, monitors and licenses nursing homes and other care providers, and collects healthcare policy data and prepares reports and analyses. They are the office that did many of the charts that you saw in this handout. And, Mr. Chair, that's as quickly as I could move through. If there are any questions, I can stand for them now.
I think, Mr. Wells, you probably set a record for an overview on the health and human services budget category. I compliment you. We have some people that have asked or indicated already they have questions. Representative Solberg is first.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wells, in your last, second to the last page, you talked about the sexually dangerous persons in the secured hospital. And obviously, that's where we want those people to be, in hospital. Can you tell me the increase of expenditures from the governor's proposal in that one category? Do you have that line item? And if not, can you just get it to me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I don't believe there are any governor's initiatives within This program for the programs that handle sexually dangerous persons, the only initiative in the governor's program or governor's budget was actually a cost savings, because they had overestimated the number of people that would need to be put into these hospitals, and that overestimation, going to the now lower estimate of the people that need to be housed, they're able to keep one housing pod closed rather than opening it, and it provides a savings to the department.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up. My understanding, I think, within the Attorney General's request, is some increase for the prosecution of commitment of the sexually dangerous. Can you get some kind of a figure on that, and are you coordinating that with the different agencies on the request from the prosecuting to make sure that sexually dangerous people are not released?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I'm unaware of that initiative. I believe that falls under the State Government Committee's budget, and I don't know if that is having an impact on the projected residency rates in the future. I think they've taken that into account, but I can check on that and get back to you.
Thank you.
Representative Slaughter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wells, two questions on the TANF reserve forecast. The unspent funds of about $98 million. Can you tell us why were those funds unspent, and what can they be spent on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, the state receives, as long as we keep up our maintenance of effort every year, we receive a block grant of about $263 million from the feds each year for TANF, and the dollars are spent on programs that help low-income people out of work reach self-sufficiency, either with cash assistance, food assistance, and child care assistance are the eligible programs. I'm not exactly sure all the reasons why we're running a balance, but I think that the part of the reason is we spend enough in our own maintenance of effort to receive the full block grant, but caseloads have been going down slowly over the previous years. And so I think it's been a case of, with each forecast, they've been dropping the caseloads, and some money remains unspent. So we would have $98 million to spend on these programs. And I'm going to add parenthetically, the governor recommends using some of those dollars to pay for costs that otherwise would be borne by the state for certain programs on sort of a one-time basis, TANF refinancing, they call it, and that would free up $72 million in this biennium for general fund spending.
Mr. Chairman, you know, just a follow-up, I mean, when we talk about diminishing caseloads, are we really talking about eligibility levels that are so low that folks aren't eligible? I mean, that's at least in part of the child care programs. I know that's part of the issue. Have you tracked that at all in terms of actual eligibility affecting it not being spent down?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, I don't have enough familiarity with the programs yet to comment on that. I do know that there's a very small number of people who have been declared ineligible for the program because they either don't qualify, they're not meeting their requirements for work participation, and also some people that have reached their 60-month time limit, their lifetime limit to be on the program. But I'm told that's a very small number of people.
Mr. Chair, of course, more I'm talking about child care and how child care affects TANF. And if, Mr. Walls, I know this committee at some point will deal with this TANF refinancing. It's a practice that has been done for, what, about 7 years, where the governor has proposed taking TANF money, putting into these services, and then freeing that money up and put it into the general fund? Is that how it works?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, that's correct. I'm not exactly sure how long it's been going on. It's been one of the funds over the past few years that's had money in it. And so that there have been several instances of TANF refinancing.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Walls, theoretically we could keep that money and spend it on human services, right, instead of refinancing?
Representative Slavin, that's correct.
Thank you.
Next is Representative Hausman.
Chair, just a question of clarification on the DHS-based funding pie chart where it references the lottery money. Did I understand that is treatment for compulsive gambling?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's correct. They receive a $350,000 base appropriation and then a very small percentage of gambling lottery proceeds to go for gambling addiction programs.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to follow up on the question of the excess TAF funding as well. It seems like, and I don't know, I know you... You may not have this information yet, but it might be helpful to track the folks whose opportunities to get job training under those dollars has been cut back, you know, to less than half, I believe, in recent years, and to see what impact that has had on job training education, both of those has had on those funds. And I don't know if we have anybody who's tracked that, but it seems like it would be very helpful. Because as we've cut back people's opportunities to get education, get themselves out of poverty, those dollars just hang around and don't do the work they should be doing.
So you're asking Representative Clark if anybody's tracked that?
Yeah, I'm gathering from what you said earlier. Maybe you haven't yet, but maybe it's something you could do.
Mr. Wells, are you aware of any information on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I'm not exactly fluent in the specifics of the program yet, but
yes.
That's information that I believe I can get and provide to Representative Clark at the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, then, Representative Huntley, if you could give us an overview as chair of the division, what you see as some of the priorities and needs.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the TANF money's already been discussed, and I'm sure Representative Clark would like to spend all of that money in her committee, and that Representative Slawick would prefer to spend all that money in her committee, and I would prefer to spend it all in my committee, so we'll have to settle that out. But also, as Mr. Wells pointed out, there's about $72 million of that money that's basically going to the bottom line and to free up money in the general fund. That's a highly questionable use of that money. Just a reference to there's the questions about sexual predators. The New York Times has a series of articles started yesterday and today about these types of programs around the country, and it's pretty interesting. They're treated as if they're in a hospital, yet there's really no medical service that works for these people. Just for the information of members, John Walls described the part of the health departments in that's in my committee, and basically it's the oversight of nursing homes, hospitals, and some other less expensive things. But the interesting thing on the oversight is the health department goes all over the state and looks at nursing homes, sees the quality of care that people are getting. One of those is the Veterans Home, particularly in Minneapolis, and so I have the part of the health department in my committee that does oversight of nursing homes, and Representative Clark has the part that pays for the veterans' homes. So we have a huge interest, both of us, in the events of the last, actually, I wanted to say the last month, but this has been going on at the Minneapolis Veterans Home for years. And it's time, I think, that the legislature and the governor seriously address this problem. There doesn't seem to be that problem at the other veterans' homes around the state. There's something wrong with the one in Minneapolis. Issues that we'll have to address in this committee are health care reform, in addition to long-term care. Health care reform, the governor has his approach, some of which I support. The Senate has a different approach. Senator Berglund has a different approach to health care reform and how we spend the health care access fund dollars. And the House will have to come up with their plan and how we're going to, what we're going to do with Minnesota Care, what we're going to do with the health care access fund dollars, and how we reform our health care system. So somehow we're going to have to ultimately reach an agreement with the Senate, the governor, and the House on this very important issue. And as John Walsh pointed out, we spend about $400 million a year out of the health care access fund. That was originally intended to go just to support Minnesota Care. And in the last 6 years, we've taken about $580 million out of that fund, put on the bottom line. And with this year, the governor has a number of initiatives that would total up to about $90 million out of the health care access fund that I would contend don't represent what that fund is supposed to be spent on. So that will be a contentious issue. And overriding everything is how we pay nursing homes and long-term care. And we have a system that's developed that is not fair across the state. Some parts of the state get nursing home gets paid more than other parts of the state. It was based on an era when we had different job markets around the state and people didn't travel very much well. That's not the case anymore. We basically have pretty much one job market for the entire state, yet we're paying nursing home workers different amounts in different places. And that is a huge part of the budget, nursing homes, long-term care. The governor has proposed a roughly a 2% and 2% COLA. That's about, John can correct me, $92 million. So that if we want to get more than that, which most of us do, it quickly uses a lot of money. And on the other hand, this is very demanding work for people who work in nursing homes. They're very dedicated, and I would ask every member of this committee to ask themselves if they would do that kind of work for $8 or $9 an hour, sometimes without health care benefits. So there is a huge problem for the state and a huge problem for this committee and a huge problem for my committee is how do we get funding to support the people that work in nursing homes.
Okay, thank you, Representative Huntley. Any questions? If not, then Representative Junkie, we didn't get to you the other day to give your division overview after the fiscal analyst did the presentation. If you'd care to comment today, that would be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Our division oversees four budgets, basically the Department of Agriculture, AURI, Board of Animal Health, and the Veterans Affairs budgets. Members, just an overview briefly. General fund dollars, agriculture takes and spends about one-half of 1% of the state's budget. Yet, in the state's economy, between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 jobs are still dependent on agriculture in this state, whether it's General Mills, Cargill, or other big operations here in the Twin Cities, or whether it's the biofuel industry across the state, or other food and inspection services, computer services, other things associated. So I would argue that the state gets a pretty good deal from agriculture as far as our economy goes, and I think we do need to pay some attention to it, albeit as small a piece of a budget it is. Cuts are fairly telling when we have to make them. So we would ask, obviously, for consideration of some increases like the governor has in his budget this year. We need to make up, I think, from if we go back 4 years to when there was $4.5 billion in deficit agriculture, that was about a 14% overall deficit in our general fund, and agriculture took a 28% hit at that time. And we are still trying to make up for that as we move forward. Major things in agriculture, obviously Department of Agriculture and their operations, which is mainly food and chemical and fertilizer inspection. They ensure the safety of the food that we all eat and consume in this state and do a good job of it. Another major section they do is biofuels, whether it's the ethanol producer payments, whether it's biodiesel development, or in the future, the next generation of fuels in the renewable energy realm, particularly the biofuels, will come through the Department of Agriculture and their oversight. We're looking at funding for research and investment in that industry, the new cellulosic ethanol industry, if you will, in the state, which should be here in the next 5 to 10 years, we hope. So we're looking ahead and trying to plan for our future to keep that sector strong and growing. Board of Animal Health, while a small division, a very important one nonetheless, we have bovine tuberculosis, bovine TB in the northern part of the state, which is hampering our ability to trade and sell our beef products, and we're looking to eradicate that. We also, in association with the Department of Health, are one of the front lines for the avian influenza or the bird flu you were all reading about. I assume Department of Health is for vaccine and healthcare development. We're really the front line. If it ever gets into the state members, it will be in our flocks, probably of poultry, most likely turkeys, and IDing. Isolating and eradicating is extremely important in that, and we have been gearing up over a number of years to make sure we're ready to address that when it comes so we never have to get to the point of using the health department. It really starts with the Animal Board of Health and their activities out there. AURI, we are looking for increases in that. Ag Utilization Research Institute, it is our research arm. They did help developing biodiesel in this state and ethanol. And they continue with value-added agriculture. And, of course, their big one now is our next renewable fuel future. We set this board up in about 1987, I believe, and they've really been an independent voice, including now they're coordinating renewable fuels research around the state with quarterly meetings, bringing all the stakeholders in, University of Minnesota, MinSCU, and independent researchers around the state, and trying to coordinate what's going on, which I think is very good. We're not just flock shooting or scatter shooting renewable fuels future in the state, but rather trying to coordinate it in a way that we share information and understand the right hand understands what the left hand is doing, if you will. So AURI, I think, has grown dramatically in their importance. And again, if we look back 4 years ago, they took, a 60% cut in their budget. And again, we're trying to fill that gap again as we move forward. Lastly, Veterans Affairs. Obviously important to all of us with the ongoing conflicts overseas, the involvement of a lot of veterans or new veterans in this state. We oversee that budget. There's been an ask. The governor's got an initiative, and a number of members have introduced bills. We're going to see a lot of them come down this month and talk about them. Biggest one, of course, is the GI Bill and some of those components. A lot of that is higher ed. Some of it is taxes with Representative Linchevsky. And we have the county service officers. Every county has county service officers that administer Veterans Affairs programming and those types of things. And so we're certainly going to focus on their activity and how we can best service this population, both the current population, but as we have returning veterans from combat zones, how are we going to address those issues and make sure that we cover those folks is extremely important. Just a footnote, the Veterans Affairs Department used to oversee Veterans Home Board, and a number of years ago they decided for whatever reason they wanted to spin that off as a standalone group with appointees by the governor's office. So at one time there was a commissioner that at level that did oversee the Veterans Home Board activities, and we've gotten away from that, and I'm sure part of the discussion will be whether that is working or not in the model. There's something wrong, obviously, in Minneapolis, and we're certainly concerned. But just a little history note, that did used to be a commissioner-level oversight at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, thank you, Representative Junkie. We have that one bill remaining that we now have the threat paperwork for.
Can I do it from here?
Yes, I'll be calling on Representative Filpi for to move the division report. Is that Representative Filpi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the adoption of the division report from the Energy Policy and Finance Division in House File 446.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Conn.
Mr. Chairman, the motion is to move that House File 446 move with no recommendation with the recommended re-referral to the Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs Committee. The bill will come back in a significantly different form without mandates that are probably suggested municipal ordinance, model municipal ordinance that I understand both Maplewood and Mankato have right now, plus other places around the country. I'm also working with the Department of Transportation, and Eric Levine is here from the Department of Transportation to meet their concerns about costs. And so there are going to be all kinds of phasing in, and they're all going to looking at some questions and so forth.
Okay, this is a members of the committee, a motion similar to the one we had last week where the policy committee has indicated that they would like to take a look at it, and so it will be coming back to you. But it's basically a procedural motion, Representative Mahoney.
You might take that. If it's just a procedural motion, I could ask it later, but I will inform Representative Conn that when you start talking about outdoor lighting at night, a lot of people work outside at night, whether we want to or not, and probably the only thing that keeps me from tripping over hoses and pipes and flanges, and hopefully you won't make me break my nose.
And the purpose of this bill is to put the light on the ground where the things you trip over are instead of up in the sky for the airplanes to see it. And anyway,
Representative Conn, you indicate you have this that you're passing out.
Yes,
to tell us what it is.
Just this is a sheet of information that the city of Calgary did, and it's just, you know, I'm just using every opportunity I have to inform people about the subject. It's not been a very visible subject, and I'd like to shed some more light on it.
Okay, as I mentioned, then this is a procedural motion. Representative Conn has moved that House File 446.
Mr. Chair,
be recommended to.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, Representative Conn, you said it's going to we're going to see lots of changes before it comes back here, and so I'm certainly going to help you get it out of here today. But I hope you'd consider deleting Section 1. I'm going to just put that on the record now. I don't like those purpose sections. They don't mean anything, and I think they do nothing other than litter the statute, folks. I hope you'd consider getting rid of that before it comes back.
Okay, the motion to re-refer local government metro affairs before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The bill referrals were attached to the agenda, so if you want to take a look at those, you have those as well. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.